So as Alice said, it's the sixth day of Sukkot today. And as I mentioned last week, because we read the scriptures about Sukkot in Leviticus, God commanded it to be a seven-day feast to the Lord, a seven-day feast to the Lord, with an additional eighth day added. And it's very strange because all of the feasts have no added days to them. You see? So we have, you know, Passover is really, it's a seven-day feast. Now, the rabbis decided to add on a day to it, and it's an eighth-day feast. But the thing is, all of the feasts have a specific day or days assigned to them. But it's really strange that God does this. He says, you're going to have a seven-day feast, and then you're going to have an additional day, an eighth day. And so that's what I really want to talk about this morning. This day, Shemini Atzeret, that we're going to really celebrate, and I'll go to that in a few minutes, but it is the eighth day. And so it is part of Sukkot, but it's separate from it. It's part of it, it's connected with it, but it is separate from it. And God gave it as a specifically separate day, although it is spoken of in those same verses because there is this common link to it. So, all right, so I talked about it. I said that we had read it before. Let's look at it one more time just to be sure that we're being correct about this whole thing, right? Leviticus 23, speak to the children of Israel saying, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the feast of Sukkot for 7 days to the Lord. 7 days. On the first day, there is going to be a holy convocation, and you should do no customary work on it. For 7 days, you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. And then he says, on the eighth day, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a sacred assembly, and you shall do no customary work on it. So he's very specific about this. He says it a few times. It is a seven-day feast. But then he adds, and he says, as an eighth day. So I want to go back and see our connection with Sukkot here, being the ingathering, as I talked about last week, the ingathering of the redeemed, both Jew and Gentile together. I want to back up a little bit here about this. And how we've said so often here that it is a picture of the ingathering of the Jew and Gentile together, eventually, ultimately, in God's everlasting kingdom. And so, bring up Numbers 29, and it's a very long portion, but I'm sort of cutting through it because there's something I want to explain about here. On the 15th day of the seventh month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work, and you shall keep a feast to the Lord 7 days. And you shall present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire, as a sweet aroma to the Lord. And now here's the setup of the offerings that he commanded Israel do. On that first day, 13 young bulls. On the second day, 12 young bulls. On the third day, present 11 bulls. On the fourth day, present 10 bulls. And all the way down, on the seventh day, present 7 bulls. And then on the eighth day, you shall have a sacred assembly. So again, he says, it is a seventh-day feast, and on the eighth day, you're going to have a sacred assembly. But here's what's happening here. Here's the order. On the first, it's 7 days. You're presenting bulls as sacrifices to the Lord. And he starts out with the 13 bulls, and every day you offer one less bull. 13. So the first day, 13 bulls. The second day, 12 bulls. Third day, 11. Get it? All the way down until the seventh day, and you present 7 bulls. It's a weird thing. We know that God does this, and he orders them in this specific order. Bring one less each day for the entire 7 days. And so here's the deal. If you add up all the bulls from the first day to the seventh day, starting with the 13 bulls and then the 7 bulls, and you add up each of the days, what you get is a total of 70 bulls. And it represents the 70 nations. So what we have here is, during the week of Sukkot, God commanded Israel to sacrifice, make sacrifices for the nations. It is truly an ingathering feast. It is truly showing us about the ingathering of Jew and Gentile together, of Israel and the nations together, because he has Israel do these sacrifices specifically for the nations. Israel, you do it. You bring them in. You do it, and you're doing it for the nations. So it makes it a special time. And then on the eighth day, God says, now you will have the eighth day, the day that we know as Shemini Atzeret. Then we are to have that as a holy convocation. So looking at our biblical calendar, it begins with this beautiful picture of Israel being set free by the blood of the Lamb, the blood of the Passover Lamb. We know, again, it's prophetic. It's a picture of redemption. Israel being set free by the blood of the Passover Lamb. And then it ends with Sukkot. That's the entire cycle. It ends eventually, as we go through all these things, starting with the blood of the Lamb, ending with God's everlasting kingdom. And so here we are, the first feast of spring. We go through the spring feast, and then we have the period in between the summer, and then we pick up again with the fall feast. And this is officially our last feast here. So the eighth day is a, just by the lack of description about it, all he says is it's a solemn holy convocation. You get together and you have a holy convocation together. It's sort of some mystery to it. We don't really know a lot about it. Very little info is written in the Bible. As a matter of fact, here we have it, Shemini is eighth. Atzeret means, basically what it means is to hold back or to keep in, basically secret. In other words, it's something you hold in, you don't talk about. It's something that you hold back, something that you don't just speak out. So just by the name, it's the eighth day, it's Shemini because it is the eighth day, but there's something secret about it. There's something mysterious about it, even by the name that it was given. But then again, God has a lot of mysteries for all of us. Even Shaul, Paul says, right? He says, it's a mystery. It is a mystery. He doesn't even understand. There are so many things that are a mystery that we don't really understand, but we do things because we know that God says to do them, and even if we don't understand them really, we should be doing them. You know, the thing is, if God says to do it, we should do it. Better than to be mistaken and do something and maybe we're not quite right with it. Of course, you go on the internet, everybody tells you, oh, we know the right way to do it. We know that you're not doing it right, and we know the right way to do it. Everybody, all these kookity-coos out there, they all know the right way to do it. But the thing is, there's 100 of them, and they all have 100 different ways that they know the right way to do it. But the thing is, Things are supposed to be a mystery. God doesn't want us to do it. When it's God's timing, he will tell us. Or he will have someone tell us what it is, but it will be from God himself. So there are plenty of mysteries, and they will be revealed to us. If God says to do it, do it. Better to be mistaken on the side of holiness than on the side of rebellion. You see what I'm saying? So the thing is, it's okay if we don't do things exactly. We do them the best way we think we should do them. We work them out many times. Sometimes God doesn't tell us exactly how to do it. Or he told Moses how to do it. And we don't know thousands of years later how to do it. So we do it the best that we think we should do it. But it's better, like I said, to make some mistakes here and there than on the side of holiness that we would like to do it because we think God would be pleased and honored to do it, than to, in rebellion, not do it at all. That's tradition. That's being under the law. You know, we hear a lot, don't we? Hey, don't we? Right? But then that's better than to be in rebellion with that. And so we may not completely understand it. So last Shabbat, maybe we could say this is my part two of my Sukkot messages, my part two of the Sukkot messages, because we do sort of have a connection here. But last week, I think that I sort of presented this good scriptural basis for the reason that I believe, and that I think a lot more and more people believe, that Yeshua was, in fact, being born on Sukkot, probably the first day of Sukkot. And if you weren't here, you can get a copy of it. You can get a CD copy from at the sound booth after, or you can go on the website, Shalom Brevard, and you can go into the media section and you can listen to that message. But if we're going to continue just a bit here this morning, I want to look at this as a continuation of Yeshua being born in the beginning of Sukkot. Let's go to the book of Luke. And when 8 days were completely, when 8 days were completed for the circumcision, the bris of the child, his name was called Yeshua. The name was given by the angel before he was conceived in the womb. Circumcised on the 8th day. If he was born on the first day of Sukkot, guess when he was circumcised? Shemini Atzeret. On the 8th day. So now let's go back and let's look at way back, and we're going to look at Abraham, and we're going to see a connection here with Yeshua and the nations and his circumcision, his bris, and find out exactly what's going on here. So Abraham was called by God while he was still uncircumcised. We know this. And because God took him out of the nations to start this separate, special people that he would call one day initially the Hebrews, and then they were called the Israelites, they were called the Jews. And so Abraham was not yet circumcised. And the covenant was given to Abraham after he had his circumcision. Okay, so let's go to Genesis and we'll look at those scriptures. And God said, "And I will establish my covenant between me and you, Abraham, and your descendants after you in their generations, for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and your descendants after you. And this is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised, and you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskins, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you." That is the sign of the covenant with the Jewish people. And so he was called before he was circumcised. He was circumcised, and all of his people were circumcised, and then God gave him the covenant. And so, here's the thing. Abraham obeyed God before he was circumcised, and he obeyed God after he was circumcised. And so, just like with Sukkot and Shemini Atzeret, Abraham's two stages were connected, but they were separate. He obeyed before the circumcision, he obeyed after the circumcision. And one thing led to the other. So they were connected, but obviously they were separate before the covenant and after the covenant, before the circumcision and after the circumcision. And so one led to the other. With circumcision, Abraham experienced a new stage in his life. A new stage. And so this is like all Jewish boys that are born. We are Jewish. We're born of either Jewish parents or one parent, but we're biblically, if you're born, if you have one Jewish parent, biblically you're considered a Jew according to the scriptures, according to the Bible. So, you know, we hear the terms, I'm half Jewish. And then my question is it from the waist up or the waist down? You are either Jewish or you are not Jewish. That's it. Because Judaism really, it is a race. So it's like, if you're white, you're white. If you're black, you're black. So if you have one Jewish parent, biblically, you are a Jew. I mean, that's God's setup of this whole thing. The rabbis decided in their craziness at one time to make it separate, and they told people, if your mother's not Jewish, you're not a Jew. It's not biblical. It's rabbinic. It is. It's just purely rabbinic. So anyway, all Jewish boys. Well, this is what happened with Yeshua, the human, born of the flesh. Word became flesh, born of a virgin. The human, 100% human, 100% man. The 100% human of Yeshua was brought officially into the covenant on the eighth day when he had his brit, the circumcision. And so it's called a bris in Yiddish, but the Hebrew is brit with a T. Brit means circumcision. Brit also means covenant. When you talk about a covenant, the Hebrew is brit, in transliteration, B-R-I-T. So a brit or bris and a circumcision, they're all the same thing. Because when you have your bris or your brit, you are now officially under the covenant that God made between himself and Israel. And so it requires blood, a circumcision. That's what it's about. Because any covenant that God made in the Bible required a blood sacrifice. When Israel would have any kind of a covenant, any kind of an agreement, even between king to king, whatever it was, they would sacrifice an animal. And the blood sacrifice would be, it is a brit. It is a blood covenant. And we sealed it with the blood of the animal. Well, the male child becomes the bleeder. So when we have the circumcision, it's that blood that seals the deal. And that's what sealed the deal between God and Abraham. It seals the deal between when I was born and 8 days later, and God's covenant with my people. And this is what happened. When Yeshua had his eighth day and he had a circumcision, that sealed the deal. He was now officially under the covenant. He was an Israelite under the covenant. He was a Jew when he was born because his mother was Jewish and his stepdad was Jewish. He was a Jew, but now he was a Jew under the covenant between God and his people. By the way, and this is just a little side thing, why was it a circumcision? Why didn't God have us cut our finger? Why didn't he say to Abraham, cut your finger and the blood will now be the... And here's why. It's called a circumcision. Circumcise. Circumcision, the Latin, around. Right? Like circle. So here's the thing. It was for him and his descendants. Every descendant. So when we have our circumcision, it cuts the foreskin all the way around, which means the seed that passes through that circumcision forever is a sign of the covenant for the future generations until they have their circumcision. You see, God was even bringing the blood into the picture, even for the seed of the descendants, which was sort of a foreshadowing of what God was going to do with them when they had their circumcision. Do you understand this connection? That's how important the blood is for the covenant. So, as Sukkot represented the nations during its 7 days with the sacrificing of the 70 bulls, Yeshua, who is Emmanuel, God with us, the Word became flesh, he came born of a Jewish woman, he came as a Jew, but he wasn't yet brought into the covenant of Israel. And that, really, it's a very important thing here. He came for his people, but God has always been concerned with the nations, with the Gentiles, even though he came first for his people. And the sad thing is, today in the body of Messiah, people want to do away with that initial stuff that he came for his people. And it's almost like once he now told the disciples to go out to the nations and to tell of me and who I am and the blood atonement and God's everlasting kingdom, it's almost like God shut the door now to Israel and it shouldn't be a part of Jewish people at all. But it's not, because we are separated, but we are connected. And it is a connection here. And so he came for his people, but God was always very concerned with the nations, and we see scriptures, and because of time, I'm not going to bring them up, but we see this all throughout the Old Testament, that God talks about the nations coming in, the nations being grafted into Israel, always being in the sense of how do the nations get redemption? Through Israel, by cleaving to Israel, by becoming part of Israel, by entering the gates within Israel. It's all through Israel. And it's through the Messiah of Israel. And so traditionally we celebrate Simchat Torah, and it's right after Shemini Atzeret. This is a tradition. It's not commanded in the Bible, but what we do is we take this time to celebrate the Word that became flesh, and we take the time to officially roll the Torah from the very end and re-roll it to the beginning again. And now, the next Shabbat, like I said before, we are starting the new cycle. So it's Simchat Torah, rejoicing in the Torah, or rejoice of the Torah. And so we take that time to do that. And here's how we like to work it out. And it makes it easy for everyone. We have some people that come a distance and stuff, but we can do it all together, because here's the thing. On Monday, before sundown, is Shemini Atzeret during the day. At sundown, it is now officially the day after the eighth day. It is now Simchat Torah. So what we do is, let's get together, let's rejoice, let's have our pizza, let's have our fellowship and rejoice at on the eighth day, we congregate together and we do that. And then after it's sundown, it's officially, according to God's calendar, it's now officially the next day. And it happens to be traditionally Simchat Torah. So after we eat, we get together, we come up here, I'll say a few words, we'll re-roll, we'll have some music, and we'll process the Torah, and we'll have people that come up in different aliyahs, and we'll do that. So we do it all in one shot here on Monday, you see? And so we're really, we're actually following the whole lineup of everything in that day, and that's why we do it. So we are a distinct people together. Jew and Gentile. But we are undeniably corrected by the blood of Yeshua. We are one body. And this is the wonderful time of the year that we can celebrate that. And so I'm going to leave you with this morning, with the words of Isaiah. And let's go there. In that day, and I put certain things in yellow because I want to talk about these just for a minute. This is very, not just prophetic about Sukkot, but about God's kingdom. And in that day, Hayom, that day, what's the day? It's the day that it's all ended. And the cycle is ended, and we are now in the kingdom with the Lord. In that day, the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious. And then the Lord will create above every dwelling place of Mount Zion, and above all assemblies, a cloud and smoke by day and the shining of a flaming fire by night. For over all the glory there will be a covering, and there shall be a tabernacle for shade in the daytime from the heat, for a place of refuge and for a shelter from storm and rain. So this is Isaiah 4, 5, and 6. And so we have here, so this is the English. I took it from the New King James. But let's look at the Hebrew words here. Because the branch is tzemach. Tzemach is a branch or a root. Tzemach. And we sang this morning, there shall come from a root out of Jesse, and a branch shall grow from his roots. We sang that from Isaiah at another place of Isaiah. Why? Because that was about the Messiah, and he shall reign over all the earth. Who? The branch. And so in that day, the branch of the Lord's going to be beautiful and glorious. And then it says, and there will be a covering. The Hebrew is chuppah. Chuppah, a canopy. You know you have at every Jewish wedding? A chuppah. Because this is the marriage. And so chuppah. And it says, and there will be a tabernacle for shade. The Hebrew is, if you go into Isaiah and you read it, it is a sukkah. So we read it. And on that day, the branch, and there will be a chuppah, and there's going to be a sukkah. God is telling us in Isaiah, it not only is it the finalization of everything and what is represented in the sukkah, but it tells us, because what do we read about in Revelation, and what do we know about when we come together with Yeshua? It's called the marriage of the Passover Lamb. The marriage of the Lamb. Well, we know. Why? Because it's going to be a chuppah. This is telling us about that day when we have the Lamb, the branch, and we have the chuppah, and we're going to sukkah together with him as we are celebrating it right now. And so this is a time that we are to really rejoice, because it's showing us what our future is. For those that want to believe it, it's wonderful. For those that refuse to believe it, I can't force them to believe it. But it's true. And so, this is what we all would have forward to look what we have to look forward to. We praise you, Lord. So we thank you, Lord, for showing us our place, our resting place. Our resting place with you in your everlasting kingdom. We praise you. May this day and every day forward be a day of rejoicing for what you have in store for all of your people, Israel and the nations. We praise you. In Yeshua's name, amen and amen. Praise you, Lord. Hallelujah.